Isaiah Thomas checks in for his first time as a Cavalier.
Peter Cavalier, welcome to the land, number three, Isaiah Thomas.
One to CIT.
Hey, now look, who did he play with last year? Jay Crowder.
Isaiah Johnson scores.
There he is.
28-25, his first Cavalier buckets. IT turns the corner.
And he finished it! And one!
Isaiah hiding behind the screen.
Buries it for three!
Good looking stroke from Isaiah Thomas. IT wide open. Like a layup!
Isaiah's got 11!
IT head on a swivel. Got the screen, well timed. No look inside it. Three!
IT on the mark, timeout Portland.
It's a special night for me. I haven't played in 7 months. To be able to be out there and compete against another team, it was special. And obviously to get the win was even bigger, but just to be able to compete and be out there and be in an arena setting, game setting, it was a great feeling for myself. Yeah, I was mad at T-Lou too. He took too long to put me in. The whole moment, the whole game, this whole day today has been special for me because I've been down for so long and it was a long road to get here, but it's finally here and I'm happy to be playing and feeling like myself a little bit.
You have a long, you know, absence like that. You just want to see one go in. You want to take a fall here or you want to take someone hit you right where you've been injured, and if you can respond to that, then you feel real good about, you know, the rest of the game. And, you know, he did better than everybody expected.
The most important thing for Isaiah, you know, he is a guy whose entire game is built off of attacking the basket. That is how he got to who he is. And so the question is, when he comes back, will he be afraid of contact? Not only was he not afraid of contact, he got a technical foul for complaining about not getting a foul call. So that was a really good sign for the Cavs. He obviously put up a lot of points, and he obviously is another offensive weapon. They were in a slump offensively, guys. They had only been averaging about 96 points during their three-game losing streak. He comes back, they put up 127. That wasn't the only reason. Their other guys had good nights, too. But obviously, he's a difference maker offensively for this team.
Jim Caldwell is a coach who interviews very well. He's a great man. A great man. And it's unfortunate when you see this type of situation unfold. Look, there was a sense, I got a text on Saturday night that assistants were told that they wouldn't be back. The Lions said that wasn't true. But I think it was very apparent that change was afoot in Detroit. The change has been made. I think that one of the places that the look with Bob Quinn there, you have the two assistants, former Patriot assistants, Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia. I would think that the Lions would have an interest in talking with both of them because that's where Bob Quinn, their general manager, came from.
It's always tough. Obviously, when I seen it on my phone, it got really emotional just because of the man he is and the effect that he had on everybody, you know, in this locker room. But at the same time, we know what it is in this business, and we have to just keep moving forward.
Obviously, anytime something like that happens, it's disappointing and tough. You know, a guy that you worked really closely with for 4 years, and you know the amount of work that he put in and all that kind of person he was. It's tough, you know, to have it in that way. A great guy and a great coach.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us as we get rolling at 11 minutes past 3 o'clock on this Wednesday. The third afternoon of the month of January in the year of our Lord 2018. And yes, we have a very interesting conversation coming up in about a half an hour, at about 3:35 or so, actually, so a little less than a half an hour, as we talk race and the National Football League coaching. Why? Well, because a writer decided it had to be done. It's really one of the strangest things, honestly, that I've seen in a long time when it comes, you know, and this is at a time when race is sadly and, you know, rearing its ugly head in a number of conversations where it should not. It really, you know, there's a whole bunch of coaches that got fired or replaced or whatever the case might be, or leaving, stepping down. There are a whole bunch of coaches that are going to be hired to take those jobs. And by and large, in 2017, I don't think too many people are evaluating coaches who are being fired based on their skin color and coaches that are being hired based on their skin color as much as they're being evaluated based on their performance and their resumes. And I think that's fair to say across the board, but that didn't stop one writer who wrote a piece that ran in the Free Press last week from proclaiming that Jim Caldwell, the very, very professional, well-respected, admired man if not professional and respected and admired successful coach of the Detroit Lions, who has been released from his duty, saying that he was being pressured or his job was being threatened or he was on the coaching hot seat, if you will, because of race. Yeah, Joseph Hayes is the guy's name who wrote that piece for, like I said, he wrote it for his newspaper, and it ran in a few other papers, but particularly it was picked up by the Detroit Free Press because it was about a Detroit coach. And now, just a few days after that article ran, Coach Caldwell was fired, and it's got people talking about African-American head coaches, and particularly Jim Caldwell. And I said, you know what, I've got to talk to this guy, this Joseph Hayes. I don't know him. I've never met him. I've never read his work before, this particular piece, but it just troubled me a great, great deal. Reading some of the arguments contained within it, some of the factual errors, I think, and omissions that were in it, I said, we've got to talk about this. And so we will, coming up at 3:35. We've left the top of the hour segment open after that, FYI, just a little, you know, advance notice for you, because I want to hear your reaction to the conversation. I want to hear your reaction to his argument. I want to hear your reaction to just the issue of black coaches in the National Football League today, because it's a very different time now, I think it was. It was a very different time than even, you know, just a decade or so ago when the Rooney Rule was started, and I don't know exactly what. Kush, could you look up and see what year the Rooney Rule was implemented? When was it that the National Football League agreed under the leadership of former Steelers president Dan Rooney and owner Dan Rooney to make sure that at least one minority was interviewed for every head coach, I believe, offensive and defensive coordinator and front office, such as general manager position, to try to, you know, advance the cause for African-Americans in those positions. Well, primarily African-Americans. Shouldn't say that because it's minorities in general. Ron Rivera, for example, head coach of the Panthers, meets that type of requirement. He is, of course, a Hispanic man. So, but whenever it was, you know, that the Rooney Rule was implemented, and Jim will have that for us in a second, I hope. It's a different time today. It's a very, very different time today. And I found it fascinating, quite frankly. And one of the things we're going to talk to Hayes about. I found it fascinating that he was proclaiming race as the center of the reason for the criticism of Jim Caldwell.
Before we continue real quick, 2002 is when the Rooney Rule came into being.
So it's been in place now for 15 years. I won't count this year because 2018 just started. So 15 years, essentially, for all practical purposes. I think the league is in a very different place today. I think the country is in a bit of a different place today in that regard, too. And I'll get more on that in a second. But to the point of Jim Caldwell being a black head coach and potentially being under fire for his job, you know, prior to the announcement that indeed Bob Quinn was replacing him, I found that kind of interesting because of the two other, well, actually three other very large stories in the NFL right now. Number one, of course, is the obvious one to our east, out in Cleveland, an African-American head coach by the name of Hugh Jackson has had literally the worst record, the worst performance in the history of coaching in the National Football League. Through 2 years. No one has ever gone 1-31 for a 2 year period, let alone started out their tenure with a particular team at 1-31. I mean, it's literally the very worst anybody has ever done. Ever. And the man kept his job despite his status as an African American. Well, how do you explain that? I don't know. I have to ask Joseph Hayes about that. And then earlier today, just found out that the reports from 2 or 3 weeks ago that we got that Marvin Lewis, after 15 years, was finally going to be parting ways with the Cincinnati Bengals. 15 years of close but never winning a playoff game. 15 years, 7 playoff appearances, 0-7 in the postseason. 15 years of, this is what we call, yesterday we talked about, you know, advancement, regression, or spinning your tires and staying where you are. The Cincinnati Bengals for 15 years have spun their tires. Well, no, that's not true. Because the state of the Bengals prior to Marvin Lewis's arrival, they were awful. They were putrid. He made them relevant. He brought them from the brink of well, what Cleveland is today, to respectability. In fact, I think it was in his second season he won 11 games and took them to the playoffs. Did not win again. He did only make what. Here's what's really strange too. By today's standards, I wonder if starting out today, Marvin Lewis would get what he got. And what he got was the first 8 years of his coaching career and tenure in Cincinnati, he only made the playoffs twice. Twice in 8 years. Lost both playoff games. Jim Caldwell was just fired for losing both of his playoff games in 4 years. He didn't get four more. Marvin Lewis got four more, which is exceptionally permissive, if you will, of Mike Brown and Bengals ownership. But then he had a run where he had five more playoff appearances in the last, or in the next, what would that be? 6 years. 5-6. And lost every one of those. And then he has missed the playoffs for each of the last 2 years. So if my math is right, 8-6-2, that'd be 5. So actually, 15 years. He's been there 15 years. So he would have been 2 out of his first 8, then 5 in a row, then missed the last 2. That's what it was. But amidst all of that, they now, you know, for the last several years, obviously, it has just been spinning their tires. Not regressing, not advancing, not getting closer to a championship, not falling back to the putrid levels they were before. It's just been hold the course, stay the course, steady as she goes, status quo, find your metaphor there, and that in cliche, and that's what the Bengals have done. And this is an African-American who just after 15 years of never winning a playoff game just got his contract extended by 2 more years. He's going to coach them for 17 years. And he's never won a playoff game. By contrast, the only other coach with a longer tenure with his current team is Jim Cushion. I'm sure even you can guess this one.
Belichick.
Bill Belichick, who has had a little bit of a different record of success. Bill Belichick has 5 more Super Bowl championships than Marvin Lewis has playoff victories. That is to say 5-0. Belichick is of course, the longest tenured guy with all of the right reasons. Marvin Lewis is going to be the longest tenured. Well, he's the second longest tenured guy. And if he coaches both of these next 2 years, will be a 17-year guy with 0 playoff victories. And that's inexplicable. But to hear some people tell it, you know, African-Americans have to be perfect. African-Americans have to do things differently than white coaches do. That's why Jim Caldwell is no longer the coach of the Detroit Lions. And yet, how does that explain the worst coaching performance in the history of the sport, talking about Hugh Jackson, and one of the most underperforming runs for the longest period of time in the history of the sport? He is already. Marvin Lewis is already the longest tenured coach to never have a playoff victory. That he said a while back. How do you explain that? And I bring that up in the context of the third big story as far as coaching in the National Football League goes. And that, of course, came from John Gruden, who has acknowledged that, yes, he has had meetings that have been very productive with Mark Davis. And that means he is indeed, the rumors are going to be true, that he's going to take over the head coaching job with the Oakland Raiders, the one that he gave up when he was traded, literally traded by the Raiders for 4 picks, 2 number ones and 2 number twos. How about that? Remember that? From the Tampa Bay or to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he then, despite the loss of those picks, won a championship in his first season with the Buccaneers, beating the Raiders in the Super Bowl. Now he's going to come full circle after being in the broadcast booth for the last decade, and he is going to take that job back over as the Raiders are just, what, 2 years away from moving into the new stadium in Las Vegas, if I understand all of that correctly. They wanted a splash for when their move to Sin City, and they've got one. So what does that have to do with race? Well, the fact that, according to multiple reports, the Raiders may be violating the spirit of the Rooney Rule by essentially firing Jack Del Rio and immediately hiring John Gruden and not going through the minority interview process for these particular positions. One potential caveat there, if you want to call it that, the Raiders general manager, Reggie McKenzie, is an African-American himself. Can an African-American choose, since he's the GM and in charge of choosing the coach, although, of course, he didn't do anything without Mark Davis, the owner, being a part of it, can an African-American choose a white coach without going through the Rooney Rule process? Or would that necessarily still be a violation, if not, you know, in the letter to the letter of the law, but in the spirit of the law? Not really sure. We'll see how that goes. The Raiders, for their part, are saying we have talked, or at least discussed, the position with multiple minority candidates, some in-house, but have all decided that we want to go get John Gruden. Is that okay? Is that not okay? We'll see. But I have two questions here. One, I will talk to Joseph Hayes about, who wrote this article, is how do you explain the tolerance and patience for coaches that are doing historically bad jobs in their prospective cities, who are continuing to hold on to those jobs, in terms of Hugh Jackson and Marvin Lewis. And then my second question is more for you, and that is, do you think the Rooney Rule is still needed in the National Football League? You know what I mean? I mean, with the success of coaches, black coaches in this league, you know, like Mike Tomlin, for example, and, you know, of course, Tony Dungy, who's retired now. But, I mean, I feel like as we watch this league evolve, they have indeed evolved. And I mean that in the truest sense of the word. Evolution has happened. Evolution of thought. I mean, let me branch out into the quarterback position. It wasn't too terribly long ago. Maybe it was, depending on your perspective. Is 10 or 15 or 20 years too terribly long ago? That black quarterbacks were still, you know, hey, is a guy who's a black quarterback seen enough as a quarterback or just a really fast athlete? Because blacks happen to usually be better athletes. They're faster and they can run, but they're not the best decision makers in the pocket. Blah, blah, blah. Do I really want to draft a black quarterback, right? That was a thing, you know, it was a thing in the 70s. It was a thing maybe even into the 80s. I don't know that it's a thing anymore. Nobody blinked and said, DeShone Kizer, wow, he's a black guy drafted by the Browns. Nobody said, wow, DeShone Watson, they took a black guy that high? Nobody does that anymore. Jameis Winston was the number one overall pick. Nobody cared what color he was, and with good reason. Right? Teddy Bridgewater was a first-round pick. Nobody cared. Good reason. Just a good player. DeShone Watson, DeShone Kizer. I mean, you just look up and down. If you can play, you can play. Lamar Jackson, the Louisville quarterback. It'll be interesting to see how high he goes. An extraordinary athlete. Just, I mean, maybe the fastest quarterback that I've seen coming out of college since Michael Vick. And we all know Michael Vick's abilities on the field. Forget about all the stuff off of just his incredible athleticism. And oh, by the way, he also had a rocket arm. Lamar Jackson might be another guy to test this theory with, but I just don't think anybody cares. You're just looking for the best players, and nobody sees quarterbacks as potentially able to or not able to do something based on skin color anymore. And I feel like it's more that way with head coaches as well. I feel like it's, hey, I know that guy. You know, if you're the Lions, for example, Terrell Austin is a defensive coordinator. And he's a good defensive coordinator, or he's an average defensive coordinator, based on what we've seen from our defense, not based on whether or not his skin is the right color to be a head coach. And I feel like it's just more and more becoming that way, where it's people are being evaluated. You know, I don't want to go off the wall here, and I don't want to get overly cheesy when I say this, but it's almost like people are being evaluated. Gasp. On the content of their character, the content of their coaching, the content of their resume, rather than the color of their skin. Where have I heard that before? I think I remember hearing that. Somebody had a dream about that one day. It seems like that's where we are with quarterbacks and coaches now. Do we really still need the Rooney Rule at all? Just something to think about. Just something to think about as we kind of watch these coaching jobs come open and watch coaching jobs get filled, that a couple of guys that I think probably most of America, certainly most of their fan bases, most of the people who root for the Browns wanted to see Hugh Jackson gone. Most of the people who root for the Bengals are sick and tired of seeing Marvin Lewis there because he isn't getting it done either. Most of them want to see him gone, and yet both of them are there. Both of them are minorities. What does that say about the state of race and coaching in the National Football League? Want to get your thoughts on this at 866-240-1065, but I'm going to ask you to hold off on those calls until after the conversation I have with Joseph Hayes. He's a columnist and a sports reporter who says that Jim Caldwell was being unfairly treated in his job by the or a job with the Alliance by fans and media who are racist. They didn't like the fact that he was a black coach. That conversation is going to come up after our bottom of the hour local sports center, which is coming up after We Get Wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Let's talk about former University of Toledo Rocket, current Kansas City Chief Kareem Hunt. A banner season for his rookie year, a 1,327-yard rushing total, making him the 14th rookie to ever lead the NFL in rushing, just the fifth since the merger. The other four to do it one single year since the merger, Earl Campbell did it in 1978, Eric Dickerson 1983, Edger and James did it in 1999, and of course Ezekiel Elliott, former Buckeye, did it last year. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Coming up, we're going to talk about Jim Caldwell, and we're going to talk about race in NFL coaching. Is it still a factor? Was Jim Caldwell treated unfairly because of his skin color? Joseph Hayes, columnist, says yes. I say very, very seriously doubt that. We'll have that conversation next right here on The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on, we are at 3:35. Thanks again for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, focusing our attention above or on top of or across the state line once again, and looking at the Detroit Lions' now vacant coaching job. It was a little over a week ago, I believe, that we were reading, and I was reading with some incredulity, an article that appeared in the Free Press that was not written by a Free Press writer. It was written by a columnist and a reporter for the Times Herald, part of the USA Today network, whose name is Joseph Hayes, which said that if Jim Caldwell is to be fired, it is going to be tied to racism. Indeed, the article was headlined that Caldwell's hot seat was due to racism. The fact that he is a black coach is not getting enough respect from the Detroit fans and the Detroit media. I can only wonder what the belief is now that he actually has been fired after four seasons with a 36-28 record, two playoff appearances, zero playoff victories. To say that this has been the subject of a lot of discussion would be an understatement. I said we need to talk to Mr. Hayes, and he was kind enough to reach out. He responded to us and was kind enough to join us today right here on the Extravaganza. Joseph Hayes, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm blessed. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. I like that. That's a great answer. I'm going to use that. I might have to steal that. I'm blessed on a daily basis, too. I just don't always say it out loud. I really respect
Amen.
That. All right. So let's... Let me ask you this before I give you my reaction to this and we discuss the merits of your argument, which is going to be the main reason I wanted to have you on. What have been some of the other reactions that you have gotten since you wrote this article? I've taken a look at Twitter, and I've taken a look at a few comments under the article in various places. How do you perceive your reaction or the reaction you've gotten from this?
You know, it really was interesting and perplexing at times. I feel like in many cases it was misconstrued that, I mean, whenever you talk about race, it becomes an emotional topic for people, and they always put themselves in that person's shoes and says, are they talking about me? And so I think a lot of people got it misconstrued that I was talking about every Detroit Lions fan. If you wanted Jim Caldwell dismissed, that means you were a racist. And I think that was pretty baseless, but that was part of the reaction to it. And then as the column continued to spread, the reaction really turned very positive. And I remember sitting down with my best friend a day after the article initially ran, and we just went through, up until that time, every email I had received. And at that time, it was 200-some. And it was like 75% of them were very negative. About 25% were very racist out of that negative group. But the positive ones were so impactful that, I mean, I remember I got a call from a 73-year-old pastor in Detroit who told me that he had been so bogged down in life and that my column inspired him to get up and start fighting again. And those type of reactions, those make it worth it, because this is something that I've just been watching over time, something that, I've been a Lions fan just growing up in Detroit my whole life. I mean, I've been out in Port Huron now 11 years with this job opportunity, but I'm a born and raised kid from Detroit. So I've been through the highs and the lows and so forth, And to watch how Jim Caldwell has been treated in the media and so forth, it really was perplexing. And I feel like with Bob Quinn's press conference yesterday, the Lions really have some high expectations now. And we'll see if the next guy can really follow suit.
All right, there's a lot to unpack there. And you're right, by the way, they do have some high expectations with, I think, at the end of the day, is what justifies their firing. They felt like the higher aspirations and the goals that they have set are something they just don't think that Coach Caldwell is capable of taking them to that next level. But I want to go back to the first thing you said, which was that whenever you talk about race, people get emotional. And you're right about that. But isn't that your goal here? You brought something up that I don't know that anybody else in the media was thinking about. Wasn't it to get an emotional reaction? Because I don't think anybody else was looking at Jim Caldwell and saying, black dude,
and that's really where
looking at 36-20. Hold on, and particularly when they lost to Cincinnati and were officially knocked out of the playoff race, it was damn it, not that black guy didn't do the job right. So weren't you trying for emotion here, Joseph?
But think about this. I mean, it's easy to assume that I guess, but if you knew me, you would know that I don't write things to try to get clicks, or I don't write things for whatever purpose others might do. I write things that are a bit on my heart, things that I have been watching and perceiving, and things that I feel like are important to the conversation. And just because no one else is saying something about that doesn't mean that it's not a valid point. But the thing that really perked my interest on this topic that caused me to actually write a story about it was the comments about Jim Caldwell's personality. Because they went back to the same thing I remember watching with Tony Dungy when he was fired from Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then John Gruden went in and won a championship. Many people talked about how because of his personality, he would never be a winner, that literally he was too mild-mannered, that he wasn't passionate enough, that he wasn't intelligent enough to lead them, that he wasn't a good game manager and all these different things. And I truly believe in my heart that the basis of racism in our current society are stereotypes. I believe that whenever you judge somebody that you don't know, is normally going to be off of some type of stereotype because you don't understand them. And so when I see the same stereotypical things mentioned about many African-American men brought to this conversation, I believe that that inserted race into the discussion. And then when you look at the fact that
Let me respond to that for a second if I can, because you're going to have to point to me some examples of people saying that he's not smart. That would be a stereotypical thing. What I have heard about Jim Caldwell is, and I think your comparison to Dungy is a fair one, that he's very mild-mannered, he's very quiet, he's very reserved, and he is, and by the way, and most people that I talk to, and when I talk to callers, when I talk to other media members and so on and so forth, and I just had a guy on yesterday from the Detroit News, and we love Jim Caldwell's personality because he is such a dignified person. And he doesn't get dragged down into muck, and he isn't given and prone to outbursts and curses and other things. His dignity, the way he carries himself, and the calm demeanor is actually an attribute, not necessarily a negative thing. But I've heard that from many, many Lions fans and a lot of media, but I've never heard anybody say he's not smart, which would lead to a stereotypical race thing that you're talking about.
And in the emails I've received, many, many people pointed out to that. That he was clueless, and that he was a buffoon, and that he just wasn't intelligent, and that he wasn't a top. Like, many people literally said he just simply sucked and wasn't a good coach. And this is a man who, I don't know how many Detroit Lions coaches have actually been to the Super Bowl in their careers, but Jim Caldwell actually led the Indianapolis Colts to the Super Bowl. He actually won the Super Bowl as the offensive coordinator with the Baltimore Ravens. And it's very interesting that, like, I shared an article on Twitter today about the standard held among African-American coaches. It's only 17 African-American coaches that have actually had an opportunity in the history of the NFL. And if you look at it, their firing rate, it is amazing how many of them have won and still been fired. And in this case, we've never been in this territory before where 3 out of 4 years a person actually won and stabilized the program and was let go. And I just feel like personally, I know your experience might be different than mine, but from my personal experience and in the feedback I've received, I believe there are racial elements of this. And like I said, anytime, and I believe it's out there, how people have tried to break down his personality and equate that to performance, I believe that can only be built on stereotypes. And whenever I see stereotypes, I believe race and racism can be involved.
We're talking to Joseph Hayes, who is a columnist and reporter for the Times-Herald and part of the USA Today network. Joseph, I'm going to suggest to you that we see what we want to see. Because describing somebody's personality as being calm and being quiet and being the way Jim Caldwell is not saying that he can't lead, because you know who's quiet?
Let me finish.
Because Bill Belichick is calm and quiet and doesn't like to talk to anybody. John Gruden, who's going to take over the Raiders, is fiery and loud and likes to talk to everybody. Mike Tomlin is fiery and loud, likes to talk to everybody. There are different styles of different people that have varying degrees of success based on a number of factors, and I think the very last one among them is race. Jim Caldwell is a different kind of a coach than another guy who might be fiery. But to suggest that is a stereotype to criticize his personality and his ability to lead, if you will, as somehow being tied to race. I think we see what we want to see. And in your case, and I'm looking at your article now, you spent about a third of your article, maybe a little less. I didn't really map it out and do the math. But about a third of the article, you know, you're talking about your own personal experiences with racism in your life, as if to say, look, see, racism exists. I was a victim of it. Therefore, here's a black guy who might get fired. He was a victim of it, too.
That wasn't what I was saying, but I think when conversations like this come up and you're talking about how you perceive the situation, I think it's important for me to listen to you and to respect your opinion. And in the same way, I believe just because you haven't experienced what I've experienced, that doesn't mean that you might, I understand that doesn't mean that you might actually understand it or see where I'm coming from, but I believe it should be a respectable thing back and forth. And I believe in most of these cases, it's not respectful at all.
I would agree with that, but my point was, I certainly didn't say you didn't experience the things you wrote about that you say you did experience, never said that at all. But to suggest, but for you to suggest that because you experienced them, therefore racism must be at work here in this situation with Jim Caldwell is an awful big leap without any real evidence whatsoever.
And that's what I was saying before. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is many African Americans had an experience last year in 2017 that was tied to race. What I was saying is the theme of the entire 2017 NFL football season was race relations in America. And so what I was saying was, in my sports-related experience of 2017, race will be an essential theme. And part of what I will remember is what happened to Jim Caldwell, how it was for the first time of me watching the Lions, them actually have a stabilized plan of success. Even though his talent dwindled every year, they lost Ndamukong Suh after his first season, then they lost Calvin Johnson after his second season. Even after those humongous hurdles, they still went on to win. And like I always ask people this year, what should they have won with their running back talent and the 10 or 11 offensive line combinations and the defensive line combination? But it only factored on Jim Caldwell is not good enough. We need somebody better. And for people, that could be a wide spectrum of why. But I believe for some, race did have a part in it. Now, you might dismiss that, and I will honor your opinion
Let me ask you this. Do you think, because you're talking about fans and media, that was when your article came out, it was before the decision was made. Now the decision has been made. I'm going to ask you point blank. Was Bob Quinn and the Ford family, did race come into their consideration as they made this decision in any way, shape, or form, in your opinion?
No. And as you alluded to before, I wrote this column beforehand, and I did not focus this conversation on the Fords or on the Lions management.
I know, but that's why I wanted to ask you now. So don't believe that Jim Caldwell was treated unfairly by management because of his skin color?
No, I believe he was treated unfairly by the Detroit Lions fan base and the local media and how he was treated over the course of his career with the Detroit Lions. And I believe that when we look back on it over time, I believe that will hold up. In terms of Bob Quinn, like I said before, maybe it's because of his background and the organization he came from, but clearly he has had a different standard in his career, and he doesn't understand maybe the long-running ways of the Detroit Lions over the last two, three decades and so forth. So with him making this decision, he's basically saying, any coach I bring in, they're not going to be able to use 9-7 as the bar. Championships are the bar now. And
that's
so
right.
The expectation for the
at least
Lions
at least steps toward championships, like winning a playoff game, and then maybe the year after that you win a couple, and maybe you build your way to that. Let me ask you this, Joseph.
Agree.
Do you
know, but you have to have the talent there too.
Well, yes, you do. That of course is an element to it. And let me ask you this: do you know what the average length of an NFL coach's career is in any given tenure?
I mean, I'm sure there's a wide range of thought there.
Is an actual metric. I mean, the average length of an NFL head coach's career, if you just take all of the coaches and divide their jobs, the number of years that they've stayed at those jobs, do you know what the average length of a career is?
I do not.
It's 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Every 3 to 5 years, a coach's job is gone. Okay?
Okay.
Coach Caldwell lost his after 4, right in the middle of that thing, right in the where one would expect when a management has decided we have either not made enough progress toward being good. You know, if you're in a crappy situation, we have not made enough progress, and so we're going to make a move. Or, hey, we were really crappy before, and this guy made some progress and got us to a place where we're a hell of a lot better now than we were when we started with him, but now we seem to be stuck in neutral, or we've hit a plateau.
But out of that group. Out of that group, how many were fired with winning records?
I don't know. I'm just giving you the entire metric here, because the point is, in many cases, it's losing records. In many cases, it's winning records, but we haven't made that next step. We've made the playoffs twice out of Jim Caldwell's 4 years. We didn't win a playoff game. We should have made the playoffs this year. We had a very favorable schedule, especially in the second half, to making the playoffs. It didn't happen. Maybe he's taken us, and we're grateful to him, as Bob Quinn has said, for where he has brought us in his 4 years. But we need somebody to take us over the next hump now we seem to be stuck at. That is a very common theme in NFL front office decisions. And so he's right in the middle of the thing. I don't know that if fans or media, the people that you're talking about, or the Lions management, I don't know that any of them would say that we didn't give Jim Caldwell enough time. 4 years, we're better, but we are not getting any better now under him. We need to take another step up now.
The difference in, I believe, what you're thinking concerning the situation and what I feel is that I believe that if you were to break down the Detroit Lions roster on paper every single year since 2014, I believe I could prove to you that they've been worse in terms of their talent. But at the same time, we're expecting Jim Caldwell to progress. So Detroit, if I were to ask you...
Does Jim Caldwell bear any responsibility for that talent? I don't think Bob Quinn is operating independently of his head coach when they decide on draft picks and free agent acquisitions.
The way that it works in the NFL management structure is that Bob Quinn is the ultimate decision maker. He is supposed to inquire and formulate a plan with his head coach, but he's making decisions on what the Lions plan towards free agents and the Lions plan towards drafting. You would think that that's going to be coordinated to the systems of the coach, but in many respects, like we've seen over the years from Matt Millen trying to force Mike Williams on Steve Mariucci and so forth, many GMs do their own thing. And all I'm saying to you
okay,
is...
Okay, stop right
like,
there for
if you
a second.
Look at
if
the Lions,
stop right there for a second, if you would. What you just said was very, very profound. What Matt Millen did with Steve Mariucci, have you seen or heard anybody reporting, people who were close to the Lions situation, that Bob Quinn was making picks and decisions against the will of Jim Caldwell? Has there been any butting of heads there where Quinn is saying, no, Caldwell, you can't have this, I'm drafting that, the way that we all found out about Millen and Mariucci?
I am not making that accusation, but I do not
but
know
you
if
are.
Jim Caldwell
but you
said.
Are. And that's why I find it very strange that
talking?
You went to a former regime to make your point. You said it yourself that a coach and a GM work together on these things, and when they don't, like in Millen and Mariucci's case, well, how can you blame the head coach then? Well, that's exactly
what I'm
the
saying,
point here.
What I'm saying to you is I don't know if Jim Caldwell went to Bob Quinn and said, I need a starting caliber running back, and Bob Quinn said, no, I think Amir Abdullah and Theo Riddick will work. I don't know what Jim Caldwell said about needing a defensive tackle or another pass rusher. The only thing I know is when I look at the Detroit Lions roster and I look at their backfield and I look at their defensive line and how Ziggy Ansah has been hurt and I look at their defensive tackles and I just look at how they were built to win in 2014, Jim Caldwell has truly not had a chance to have success and build upon that because Ndamukong Suh was never really replaced, and that was devastating for us. And then when you keep going and you see how our defense really never recovered from that.
I mean, in fairness, hold on. The Haloti-Ngata came in. In fairness, nobody is Ndamukong Suh. Okay, he's one of the most dominant forces. You can't say he was never replaced. He actually was replaced with somebody who's good. Not great.
Well, what
not
I'm talking
as
about
great as him, but you're not going to find just another one of those guys.
What I'm talking about is replacing him with the same caliber of talent. Because every time
you're not
going to
find anybody who's got that same caliber of talent. I mean, are there is there more than one Ndamukong Suh that I know about or that you know about in the defensive line in the NFL?
Well, let's look at DeAndre Levy. When a DeAndre Levy was an all-pro player and he got hurt and then he fizzled out, his caliber of player was never replaced. It was replaced by a younger player who was up and coming, but not to the same caliber. And what I'm saying is from 2014 on until today, I believe if you really laid it out, you would see how the Lions roster has become worse. What has happened is we become younger and more inexperienced, and those players are developing under this coaching staff.
You could describe, honestly, Joseph, about 32 NFL teams.
I don't believe 32 NFL teams have lost Calvin Johnson.
Free agents leave all the time. Retirements happen all the time. And sometimes it takes a while to replace talent and to build things. But again, you know, I think we're looking for excuses here to talk about why there was never a playoff victory in the 4 years. Why 36-28 and not making it this year to the playoffs wasn't good enough for the Lions management. I want to go back to the race part of this for a second in a general sense, since you brought this, you know, as the main topic here. How would you explain the fact that Hugh Jackson has now presided over literally the two worst years in the history of the National Football League, 1-31. No one has ever been worse. And he has been retained for his job as an African-American. And just
I think
now
that
we found
everybody...
out, hold on, let me finish the question. And then we found out just today that Marvin Lewis, who has now been in Cincinnati for 15 years, has never won a playoff game, holds the dubious record of the most, the longest tenure with any NFL team in the history of the sport without ever winning a playoff game, and yet he was just given a 2-year contract extension. I mean, we're talking 15 years, again, of treading water. You know, they were garbage before he got there. He absolutely lifted them out of garbage to relevance, but has never been able to take them from relevance to, you know, champions or even a playoff victory in a decade and a half, and yet he's still there. If this, you know, this not giving black coaches a long enough or fair enough shake is so prevalent as you describe it, how do you explain those two situations?
Well, first of all, I think like you alluded to before, every situation can't even be compared to itself. And I really believe just the simple fact that, I mean, everybody pretty much knows that Cleveland doesn't have talent. And the reason why they're sticking with Hugh Douglas is because the management understands that. On the case of Marvin Lewis, maybe that organization actually cherishes continuity. I mean, he's actually had a lot of success there as well. It depends on how you frame the argument. I mean, many people today are calling for the head of John Harbaugh and others. I'm not saying that every single argument is race-related, but many people, they don't want to discuss race, so they lean on that argument. Many people don't even want to go where they're not comfortable, so they just try to suppress somebody saying something. But the truth is valid out there. I got many, many emails and comments from racist people who told me they didn't like people like me or people who look like me. And that one of the reasons why they couldn't wait for Jim Caldwell to be fired was because he was black. Now, you might not feel that way, and you might have never encountered that, but it doesn't mean that others aren't. So all I'm saying to you is I understand that your perception is based on where you come from and where you grew up and what you're experiencing today. Well, so is mine and many others.
I find that to be very, very insulting, to be quite honest with you, Joseph.
How is that insulting?
Well, because you're declaring that somebody's mindset is based on how they grew up rather than their ability to evolve and be an independent thinker who can absorb new information and process it based on the current reality, not their own history of where they grew up and their
Everybody is a product of their environment, whether it be now or in the past or in the future.
I'm sorry. I think that is a very blanket statement that is very insulting. You're saying that people cannot rise above or expand out and branch out into something different than what their environment was. And I just think that's very, very close-minded. No, you said it twice now. So I want you to be clear about that. You've said it twice now. So let me finish the interview with this. If Jim Caldwell had been, instead of 36-28 with two playoff seasons in 4 years. Instead, had been 38-26 and gotten two more wins this year, and made the playoffs this year. And now it's three playoff seasons out of four. Do you think any of these people that you're talking about, these fan base, the members of the fan base or the media that you are accusing of looking at him a little bit more critically because of his race, would still be doing so? Or do you think they would just say, look at that, we're seeing Honolulu Blue, not black and white, but Honolulu Blue is going back to the playoffs again, and that's what we care about?
I think that if the Lions had made the playoffs this year, I feel like many fans still would want to see Jim Caldwell gone. I believe that.
Just because he's a black guy.
Once again, I believe that many people have, I believe there's various ways and reasons for doing things and thinking different things. And I'm not trying to allude to saying that everybody believes one thing. I'm saying some people do not want him as their coach, and some people's rationale is because of his skin color in part. Many of the emails I received, people were saying that they didn't believe that black people were intelligent enough to manage things. And so from their perspective, he wouldn't be good next year, I'm sure.
Joseph Hayes wrote the article for the Times Herald, part of the USA Today network. It appeared in the Detroit Free Press. Joseph, I appreciate you coming on. It's not an easy thing to do because I know you're getting a lot of heat for this. And I think I'm going to go back to what I said as we wrap it up at the very beginning. I think a lot of times people see what they want to see. And you see what you see, and you wrote it, and I appreciate you talking about it.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Joseph Hayes. We left the next segment of the program open intentionally. No guest is coming up at 4:10 is my point. The next half hour is yours. I want your reactions to what you just heard. Is Mr. Hayes right? Tell us at 866-240-1065 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And now Isaiah Thomas checks in for his first time as a Cavalier.
Your Cavaliers, welcome to the land, number three, Isaiah Thomas.
One to CIT.
Hey, now look, who did he play with last year? Jay Crowder.
Isaiah Thomas.
There he is.
28-25, his first Cavalier buckets. IT turns the corner.
And he finished it. And one.
Isaiah hiding behind the screen.
Buries it for three.
Good looking stroke from Isaiah Thomas. IT wide open. Like a layup.
Isaiah's got 11.
IT head on the swivel. Got the screen. Well timed.
No look inside it. Three. IT on the mark. Timeout Portland.
A special night for me. I haven't played in 7 months. To be able to be out there and compete against another team, it was special. And obviously to get the win was even bigger, but just to be able to compete and be out there and be in an arena setting, game setting, it was a great feeling for myself. Yeah, I was mad at T-Lou too. He took too long to put me in. The whole moment, the whole game, this whole day today has been special for me because I've been down for so long, and it was a long road to get here, but it's finally here, and I'm happy to be playing and feeling like myself a little bit.
You have a long, you know, absence like that. You just want to see one go in. You want to take a fall here, or you want to take someone hit you right where you've been injured, and if you can respond to that, then you feel real good about, you know, the rest of the game. And, you know, he did better than everybody expected.
The most important thing for Isaiah, you know, he is a guy whose entire game is built off of attacking the basket. That is how he got to who he is. And so the question is, when he comes back, will he be afraid of contact? Not only was he not afraid of contact, he got a technical foul for complaining about not getting a foul call. So that was a really good sign for the Cavs. He obviously put up a lot of points, and he obviously is another offensive weapon. They were in a slump offensively, guys. They had only been averaging about 96 points during their three-game losing streak. He comes back, they put up 127. That wasn't the only reason. Their other guys had good nights, too. But obviously, he's a difference maker offensively for this team.
Jim Caldwell is a coach who interviews very well. He's a great man, a great man. And it's unfortunate when you see this type of situation unfold. Look, there was a sense, I got a text on Saturday night that assistants were told that they wouldn't be back. The Lions said that wasn't true. But I think it was very apparent that change was afoot in Detroit. The change has been made. I think that one of the places that the look with Bob Quinn there, you have the two assistants, former Patriot assistants, Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia. I would think that the Lions would have an interest in talking with both of them because that's where Bob Quinn, their general manager, came from.
It's always tough. Obviously, when I seen it on my phone, it got really emotional just because of the man he is and the effect that he had on everybody, you know, in this locker room. But at the same time, we know what it is in this business, and we have to just keep moving forward.
Obviously, anytime something like that happens, it's disappointing and tough. You know, a guy that you worked really closely with for 4 years, and you know the amount of work that he put in and all that kind of person he was. It's tough, you know, to have it in that way. A great guy and a great coach.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling right along. We are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hour number two gets underway at 12 minutes past 4 o'clock. We just had a very, very interesting conversation. Joseph Hayes, sports writer, reporter, columnist for the Times Herald. Jim, do you even know where that is? I was trying to find out. He said he was born and raised in Detroit. I just don't know where the Times Herald is.
I'll look it up.
I don't know if it's suburban Detroit or if it's across the country. I just don't know. I've never heard of that particular
thing. Port Huron, Michigan.
Oh, okay. So it is still...
Yes, which kind of explains why it was picked up by the Free Press, yes. In addition to being about the Lions.
Well, and why he would write something about the Lions.
Right.
Because he does have that local... Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. I didn't want to be insulting if I said I've never heard of your paper, but I hadn't. So, okay. Got it now. Joseph Hayes is sticking to his guns, saying that Jim Caldwell was treated unfairly by fans and media in Detroit because of his skin color. And his evidence of this, nothing from actual fans prior to his article, but some fans wrote him emails in response to his article with some racist slurs or insults. Of the last part, I'm not surprised whatsoever. People tend to do that, particularly low IQ people, I think, in general. If they're triggered, you know, that's a popular word these days, if they're triggered by something in culture or in society, they have an emotional reaction to it, they tend to resort to the lowest common denominator. And if he says he received racist letters in response to his article from some emailers, I'll believe him, because... like I said, people tend to do that, particularly low IQ people who have racism in their hearts anyway. However, on the other hand, a lot of the criticism that I have no doubt that he received came from well-intentioned, thoughtful people with clear minds who just cannot believe that this guy's playing the race card on Jim Caldwell's firing. At the end of the day, that's what I think is going on here. There are a lot of people who probably criticized him a great deal without anything having to do with his own race as an African-American, or Jim Caldwell's just saying, what are you, high? Stop bringing race into everything, because it's not there. Jim Caldwell was cheered when he was 11-5. He was cheered when they made the playoffs. What, was he a different color then than he was when they booed him when he was losing and didn't make the playoffs? I'm mind-boggled by that part of this. As you can tell, I'm a little bit more fired up now. I did not want to present fire to Mr. Hayes because I wanted it to be a dignified conversation, and I feel like we accomplished that. But my goodness, his only evidence to establish his position is that he's gotten racist letters to him since he wrote that op-ed or that editorial. What I want to know is how you feel about it. Does Mr. Hayes have a point? Do you think that the negative coverage of Jim Caldwell, or let me rephrase, was the coverage of Jim Caldwell negative in any way, shape, or form because of his status as a black male? Does his color have anything to do with how he was covered during his 4 years in Detroit, particularly during these last 2 years, where last year it was, all right, we squeaked into the playoffs, let's get a win, can't get a win. This year, very favorable schedule down the stretch, couldn't get a win, or enough wins, to make the postseason again. Do you think that the coverage had to do with the performance of the Honolulu Blue under his direction or on his skin color? Is Hayes right, or am I right to think that this is just ludicrous to even have this conversation? Particularly given the fact that, as I said previously, there are two African-American coaches right now, both in the state of Ohio. Kush, how about that, strangely enough?
Yeah, that's right.
Hugh Jackson and Marvin Lewis, who continue to hold on to their jobs despite differing degrees of failure. In Marvin Lewis's case, a decade and a half of failure to win a playoff game, despite obviously all the chances in the world. And in Hugh Jackson's case, the failure to win a game of any kind this year and only one in the last two. Calvin is calling us from Toledo. Calvin, by the way, I want to open the phone lines to everybody at 866-240-1065. That's the number that Calvin called, and he's up first on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Hey, Calvin, go ahead, sir.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm glad to be part of the show here. When I listen to this conversation, it was one step forward, two steps back for him, you know, because everything that he was throwing out there, you intelligently dismissed based on a variety of good points that you made. And it really kind of comes across as obviously he's a big Detroit Lions fan, which I'm sure, you know, and I watch a lot of football. I'm a Bills fan, so I know about disappointment.
Oh, congratulations, by the way.
yeah.
First time in 17 years. Good on you.
Right, for free wings to all Bengals players.
Very nice.
All right. He sounded like, based on his own experiences, and you know just as well as I do in the world we live in today, we got to point that finger and cast that blame. And how easy is it to play that race card, baby?
Yeah, and you know, you're right, and that's what I wanted to point out to him. And I don't know if you have had a chance to read the article, but he does talk about his own experiences. He talked about different things that have happened to him as he's grown up as a black male, and that sometimes people don't believe him, but those experiences were real. They happened. And so using that to say, you might not believe that some people don't like Jim Caldwell, but it's real. So he really did project his own personal experiences into the coverage of Coach Caldwell.
And you could tell, too. You could tell that obviously that he had, you know, his life experiences, that he's dealt with prejudice and, you know.
And that's a terrible thing, and I don't wish that upon him or anybody else, but to say that because I experienced it, it must be true that people don't like Caldwell for the same reason. That's the part that's, you know, that is a bridge too far.
And then, like you said, when you pointed out the tenure of coaches in the NFL, it was spot on. And then, case in point, Lewis for Cincinnati and Hughes for Cleveland. So,
Jackson.
You kind of...
Oh, huge. Okay, you meant Hugh apostrophe S. Apologies. Yeah, Hugh Jackson.
Right. So you kind of, you know, you kind of really shot down, you shot holes in all of his theories, and, you know, he sounded like he started to get a little bit emotional, and obviously you can tell that his life experiences, he's projecting, it looks a little bit maybe onto this particular situation based on some emails that he received.
That's exactly right. Which were in response, by the way, which were in response to his provocative race-based article. He received some provocative and really inappropriate race-based emails. It wasn't before. He didn't get the emails before the article. He got them after the article, which is what I think is a big part of this.
That's a very touchy subject. Anytime you throw that out there, you're going to get a bunch of feedback on it.
Yeah, and you're going to get some idiots, and you're going to get some racists who are going to say some terrible things to you, but you're also going to get some level-headed criticism, the kind that I felt like I was delivering to him, saying, look, you know, there is racism in the world. There is racism in America. There is racism in Detroit. There might even be racism in the Lions fan base and in the Lions media. But you know what? It doesn't mean that every time somebody says something negative about Coach Caldwell, it's based on his race.
And to be honest with you, you know, listening to that conversation, and obviously, you have come across as somebody who's very well-rounded and very open-minded and educated in this area. And, you know, it really did. I think everybody was kind of waiting for that to turn really ugly really fast. And you did a good job of holding it together.
Yeah.
All right.
I did a very good job.
Right.
Well, because
everybody could tell.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to trigger him. I just wanted to get to, why are you really writing this? Why are you really saying this? You have no evidence whatsoever that any media member has written anything critical of Jim Caldwell that wasn't related to a loss, a coaching decision, a play call, a clock management, or something having to do with his job. And yet to say that the media is out to get him because because of his skin color is just simply something you better have the ammunition to defend. And quite frankly, I don't think he did.
Right. Absolutely. And everything that I've heard about Caldwell as far as a coach have always been good things, you know, like you mentioned, you know, his mild mannered, his approach, his soft spokenness, the way he handled things. I only ever heard good about Jim Caldwell. I'm not a Lions fan, but I pull for him because I'm just south of Detroit ways, and my Bills don't give me much to root for most of the time, so I pull for the Lions.
Well, and you know what? I pull for Jim Caldwell personally, too, just because I like that mild-mannered approach, and I like the man. He's a man of quiet dignity. And I'm not saying I don't get excited sometimes by coaches who are fiery. I mean, we have a ball with Jim Harbaugh, you know, who's doing rap videos and screaming, you know, who's got it better than us. I mean,
right.
some guys right. are fun in that regard, and some guys carry the quiet right. dignity of Jim Caldwell,
right.
and I have deep respect
absolutely.
For him. You know, and,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at the coach there for the Patriots, Bill.
Bill Grumpachek.
Yeah, I mean, does anybody say anything about his spokenness and how he's a quiet demeanor? I mean,
they do is they say his quiet demeanor is a result of what I just said jokingly when I called him Bill Grumpachek, because he's grumpy. He's grumpy and he doesn't want to offer much of anything ever.
Right.
Around Christmas time, we were calling him Bill Belligrinch, because
right. Well, that's the secret to his success. That's his secret to success.
Exactly.
He keeps his mouth shut.
And you can win with either kind. Tony Dungy was a guy that the writer referenced, who won a Super Bowl with Indianapolis, who did it with a quiet dignity, the same kind of
absolutely.
Coach.
Absolutely, yes, he did.
And Mike Tomlin has done it with a very loud, outspoken. You know, he is a soundbite machine, boy, coming from those press conferences.
Yes, that he
different
is.
Kind
that
of
he
cat.
Is.
It doesn't matter what your style is. As long as it works,
right.
and fans will cheer it if it works.
Right. Well, hey, you Calvin, know, back
you,
to where
friend.
We were.
Oh,
thank
I'm
you.
Sorry. Yeah, one more thought. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say. Hopefully, Mr. Hayes has a good chance to maybe go back over and listen to the conversation that you and him had, and hopefully, maybe he can get a different perspective.
I hope so. I hope so, and I hope any fans who might have thought otherwise would do the same thing. And Calvin,
yeah.
I encourage people.
You did a great job. You did a great job,
Calvin. Thank you. God bless. Appreciate
thank
the call.
You.
Jim Cushlin, when exactly is the podcast going to be available? If anybody who missed that interview,
I will be getting it up essentially right before I open the microphone to be in for Mike on Drive Time today.
Okay.
So I'm a little over 40 minutes or so. Something
about
like
5 o'clock. If you
yeah.
missed the interview that I had with Joseph Hayes, you're going to want to hear it. Just check it out on the podcast page, which is of course at 1065theticket.com. Corey is calling us from Maumee next. Corey, thanks for joining us. You're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year to you guys. You guys are fantastic. Listen to you every day.
Thank you.
Thanks for all the great radio that you guys provide for us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. But, no, I agree 100% with you and Calvin there. You guys just hit all the points. I mean, of course, you're going to have people that send in emails and are going to say some things that aren't right and that shouldn't be said. But to say that racism is because of this, it's not. It's because we don't win the games that are tough games. Because we're below 20 games under 500, you know, when with teams that have winning records. I mean, you have to win these games, and you have to win some playoff games, and that's what people want. We don't want to keep seeing, you know, mediocrity with the Lions. We want to see better than that. And unfortunately, too, I think Bob Quinn, he's a new general manager, and what do usually general managers want to do? They want to get their head coach in there that is their guy, and that they can take blame for. And unfortunately, Caldwell was there, and he was doing a good job. And so he had to keep him. But it, like everybody says, it's a results-driven business, and he just didn't get it done.
You know, you make such a good point about what the Lions fans want to see. And they want to see more than mediocrity. And here's the thing. Depending on where your starting point is, maybe mediocrity is acceptable. And when you're 0-16 in 2008, and then, you know, you move to 2-14 and 4-12, and, you know, and you're still just miserable season after a miserable season, if somebody comes around and gives you mediocrity and gives you 8-8 or 9-7 and maybe a couple of playoff appearances in 4 years, even though you don't win, you're pretty damn happy. Excuse my language. You're pretty doggone happy with, you know, with the mediocrity that is. But when you've been there for 3 or 4 years at mediocrity, now it's like, that's not enough. Now I want, you know, contender status, championship status. I want to win a playoff game. I want to advance to the NFC championship game once and be a step away from the Pro Bowl. And if I feel like this guy who took us from garbage to mediocrity can't quite take us from mediocrity to champions, now it's time for the next guy to finish the job. And that's what Bob Quinn has got to do now, is find the next guy to go from mediocre to championship status. And I think that's a fair thing to ask for.
No, I agree 1,000% with you on that. And I wish it was different. I really like Caldwell. I was wishing him the best. I was hoping he would do good and he would stay around, but it just didn't happen. But to blame race, and I mean, you can tell he's had some tough experiences in his life, and
yeah.
I don't wish that on anyone, but I don't believe that this is what the problem was. And it was because of his color of his skin.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I completely concur, and thank you so much for the call, Corey. Really appreciate the good dialogue there. I want more dialogue, too, at 866-240-1065. At the end of all of this, you know, like I said to the writer, to Joseph, if the Lions had one out, and let's just say if they didn't have that spell of trash in the middle of the season when the schedule got tougher, you know, they had that run of games against Atlanta. This is after they started out the season 2-0. They had Atlanta, playoff team, Minnesota, playoff team, Carolina, playoff team, New Orleans, playoff team, and Pittsburgh, playoff team. What do you think they did against that five-game stretch of playoff opponents? 1-4. They lost 4 out of the 5 games to playoff teams. And then they had Green Bay, non-playoff team without Aaron Rodgers. Cleveland, non-playoff team. Chicago, non-playoff team. And it's win, win, win. And then they had Minnesota, playoff team, loss. Then they had Baltimore, playoff team, loss. And they had Tampa Bay, win. Chicago, win. Cincinnati, inexplicably a loss. And then Green Bay, of course, to finish the season, which was irrelevant at that point because they were out. The point is, this season, in a microcosm for the Lions, or is a microcosm, I should say, of the overall four-year Caldwell tenure. You know, the fact is they beat up on teams that are poor teams, and they kind of, you know, stack the one-loss record a little bit up. And they are lousy against championship-caliber, playoff-caliber teams. Teams with winning records dominated them during Jim Caldwell's tenure. So what does that tell you? It tells you, thank you, coach, for bringing us out of the depths of relative NFL hell that we were in before you got here. Because, quite obviously, there were some terrible coaches prior to his arrival who did some terrible jobs, put up some terrible records. But at the end of the day, I'll give you the names. You know, this is the sad truth. Monty Clark, Daryl Rogers, Bobby Ross, Marty Morningweg, Steve Mariucci, Rod Marinelli, and Jim Schwartz. What do they all have in common? They all won the same amount of playoff games for the Lions that Jim Caldwell did. Right? At the end of the day, Jim Caldwell did know better in terms of advancing a professional franchise toward the goal of every franchise, and that is a championship. He did no better at that than those guys did. None of them won playoff games. Now, Caldwell's team won more regular season games against, as we just pointed out, the weaker teams, and he did finish with a plus 500 record at 36-28. And that is to be, you know, commended. He did a commendable job in taking the team from garbage to mediocrity. But to go from mediocrity to superiority is the next step here, and if the belief is he can't beat the good teams on his schedule on a regular basis, then it's time for Bob Quinn, justifying his own job as the general manager, to find somebody who can. And that's what this is all about. And back to the issue here again. If Bobby Ross had been black, if Jim Schwartz had been black, I'm just curious, would the coverage have changed, particularly toward the end of their tenures, if Rod Marinelli had been a black man? Would the coverage have changed? Because I'm pretty sure the Detroit media was pretty hard on those guys when their tenures were over and it was clear that they couldn't win anymore or take a team to the next level anymore. Pretty sure that when a team is losing, the coverage becomes negative. And it becomes negative why? Because of skin color or because of the performance, because of the wins and losses? Pretty sure that's going to be the case in every city. Guess what? Nobody in Oakland right now is criticizing. None of the Oakland media are criticizing the coaching job done by Jack Del Rio because he's white. They criticized it, saying this year was supposed to be a championship year for the Raiders, and they took a giant step back. We need to fire him and get somebody better, and here comes John Gruden. Nobody is crying the blues for Ben McAdoo, who was fired by the New York Giants while still in season. Guess what the New York media was to Ben McAdoo? Brutal. They were brutal. And you want to know why they were brutal? Is it because he had a cheesy mustache? No. Although that would have been good enough reason too. But it's because his performance was terrible. Not his appearance. His performance. Not his color. Not his hairstyle. not his skin, not his clothing choices, his win-loss record. That's why they were brutal to him. And I would say the same thing is true of those who are critical. And by the way, Jim, would you characterize any of the coverage of Jim Caldwell in the last 2 years as being brutal?
No.
I have read articles in the various papers and, you know, MLive blogs and, you know, MLive, you know, online publications and so on. I've read some who have said Caldwell must get this done to keep his job. Caldwell deserves the blame for this loss. Caldwell's management of this or whatever the case might be, play calling that, whatever it is. I've read it, but it has been no different than it has been in any other city when losses happen, particularly if they start to pile up.
Right.
Particularly if they start to, you know, if you have missed playoff seasons. I haven't seen or read anything that was, you know, like this guy. Like in New York, it was like, get him out of here to Ben McAdoo. Get him out of here. My God, we can't take this anymore. Heck, they even did that to Indianapolis. They were harder in Indianapolis to Pagano than anybody has been to Caldwell here. They're just saying, look, nice job, coach. What did Justin Rogers say about him yesterday? Who's part of that Detroit media, who's embedded with the team as a beat writer. He's there every day at practice. He's there on every trip, every plane ride with these guys. He said, love him as a person. Love him. But questioning whether or not he can take them any further than where he has taken them and saying that if he was the general manager, remember I asked him if Bob Quinn was, his name was on the byline and Justin Rogers' name was on the nameplate in the GM's office, switch roles for a second, would Justin Rogers have fired him? Well, Justin said, yeah, I probably would have. And it has nothing to do with race. And the coverage, was not brutal. It was simply matter of fact. It's just to get us to the next place we need to be. He brought us from a different place. But to get us to the next place, we need a new voice. And I think that is, there is nothing racial about that. All right. Do we have time to get one more in here, Jim, before the bottom? Okay, dude. Because I know we have more NFL to talk about coming up. With SB Nation's Harry Lyles. That'll be coming up in a few minutes. But let me squeeze in a call from Steve in Toledo before we move on. Steve, thanks for joining us. You're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you for letting me talk with you. We were talking about this at work, and I had to laugh, and I finally told the guys at work, I said, wait a minute. Do you think Lions fans care that he is an African-American head coach? Frankly, if there was an Asian lady who could win a Super Bowl, I would take it. I could care less. The color, gender, whatever. If they can get us a Super Bowl, I'm all about it. But I'm just not about 8-8, 9-7, not making the playoffs or barely getting into the playoffs and not doing anything anymore. We've moved past our 0-16 season. We need to start progressing.
You know, you're 100% correct, and that was the point. I think that's the point most of the media and most of the fans who wanted to see a coaching change made was, we want to win. We want to go from not making the playoffs to making the playoffs, which we've done two in the last 4 years, to winning in the playoffs, to eventually being last year's Falcons. Hey, we made a Super Bowl for the first, well, that was second half for the Falcons, but we made a Super Bowl. That's the goal here, and you know what? If you had blue polka dots all over your skin, we would cheer for you if you do that for us. It doesn't matter what you look like. Just be the right person for the job. And get that job done. And I think, yes, you're right. That's all Lions fans are looking for and hoping for. It's a matter of performance, not a matter of appearance.
Yes, we're ready to put up a statue of somebody who can win a Super Bowl. I mean, that's all we care about. And I like Quinn's the first general manager I feel that has actually said 9-7 is not good enough.
And what does that say? And, you know, I love that, right? That's aspirational, isn't it? That's saying we aspire to better than 9-7 is better than what we ever were under some of the last coaches, but it's not good enough now. We've been there. We've touched that part of this journey, but now it's a plateau that we must go over. We must continue the climb. We have to go higher than 9-7. We owe that to our fans. How is that negative? That's impossible to argue with that line of reasoning.
To be honest, if we had Mayhew or Millen, Caldwell will have a 5-year extension right now.
You're probably right. You're probably right, and the tires would spin, and no progress toward that next level would be made. Steve, thank you, my friend. God bless. Appreciate the phone call. Enjoyed that. Got to get a timeout here. Bottom of the hour, local sports center is coming your way. There is some other NFL news to discuss. Harry Lyles, NFL writer for SB Nation, is going to be joining us next as we continue right here on the Extravaganza.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed it is, 4:42. So we got 18 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you by my count. We'll take you right up to drive time with Mike Miller. And Mike Miller is off today, so Jim Cushing will be filling in the big chair. Really interesting conversations about the Detroit Lions head coaching job, but not about the next Lions head coach. Who might it be? That's one of many questions, many coaching questions, I guess, that have to be answered in the coming days and weeks. Joining us now to talk about NFL matters is Harry Lyles, NFL writer and editor for SB Nation. Harry, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Outstanding. Thanks very much for the time. Really a fun time as we get ready for the wild card round of the playoffs this weekend. And, of course, the coaching carousel. Everybody likes to call Monday or this past Monday. Did people get the axe on Monday? I'm trying to remember. Did we have our traditional Black Monday, or were they nice on New Year's Day and announced them all yesterday?
Some of them weren't as lucky and got the axe on New Year's Eve. And then we had a couple there on New Year's Day. Marvin Lewis, he held out and got his little extension. So that was a nice little surprise.
Well, you know what? Since you brought that one up, let's start there. I thought finally, what was it, 3 weeks ago or so, that Marvin Lewis had essentially said he's done. He's walking away after the season, and whether it was a firing or a forced resignation or whatever, it didn't matter. It was time. 15 years of mediocrity and either not making the playoffs or making the playoffs and losing the first game. It's just enough. And then to find out that Mike Brown gave him a 2-year extension, I couldn't believe my ears when I heard that today. What were your thoughts?
I understand why people want to move on from him. I think the one thing people have to remember, and this does not by any means, make it okay that they kept him. But I think the thing that people forget about is that, one, the Bengals were pretty darn bad before he got there. And two, I don't think they're very confident with all the other openings this year that they could get the guy that they wanted. So I think the thinking behind that was, why not stick it out, as opposed to, losing him and then possibly downgrading. Do I think that makes it a great move? Not necessarily, but I understand it at the same time.
Yeah, see, I don't. I don't understand it at all. I mean, if what you say is correct, by the way, that they were a mess when he got there, but it was a decade and a half ago. I mean, guys, there are guys playing now who are in, third grade Pop Warner Pee Wee football then, who are on the team now when he started. And when you turn a team around that was garbage a decade and a half ago, congratulations, that is outstanding. But did you ever take us from garbage to not garbage, and then from not garbage to champions? And they have never even won a playoff game in 7 tries. I feel like he's been given more than enough opportunities. I just don't understand how you don't say we have to try to upgrade.
I would agree with that. And again, I think the one fear was that they weren't going to get the guy that they wanted. And I know that I believe they were going to look at the other candidates, that are out there, the popular ones like McDaniels and Patricia and, Terrell Austin and those guys, Steve Wilkes, his name's been thrown around, and Pat Shurmur as well out of Minnesota.
Right.
I don't think that they saw anybody out there that they were like, hey, we want that guy and we actually think we can get that guy. Because even guys like, Patricia and McDaniels are obviously the two candidates that everybody wants because they were going to be coming from the Belichick coaching tree and things of that nature. But when you have, jobs open like the Giants' job and then, some of these other jobs possibly that, people thought might be coming open and some of them, in turn have not, I don't think that they wanted to risk that.
I certainly do understand that risk part, but like I said, I feel like you've got to find a new voice when the same stale voice has not gotten you a playoff win in 15 years of trying. That's just, it's time for the new face and the new voice of the franchise. Let's go back to Detroit. We've been talking about that most of the afternoon in large part because of a very controversial column that blamed Jim Caldwell's troubles on race, his race, rather than the fact that he hasn't won a playoff game in 4 years for the Lions. What names are you hearing? You just mentioned Matt Patricia, of course. I think another one, even though he's not necessarily with New England at the moment, but he comes from a long history with the Patriots, is Mike Vrabel. His name has been thrown around as maybe a dark horse candidate.
Yeah, they've put in requests to interview Patricia. They did one for Vrabel. Actually, they're interviewing him today, I believe. And then other guys like Steve Wilkes, I mentioned, they put in a request to interview him, as well as Winston Moss, who's currently a linebackers coach of the Packers, and also Mike McCarthy's assistant. And then, of course, I also mentioned Pat Shurmur, who's currently the offensive coordinator of Minnesota, who's obviously going to be a hot candidate, not necessarily because that Vikings offense is going to torch you, but they've done pretty darn well with what they've got. And so, I mean, they're looking at, in my opinion, at all the right options. And I think the Lions job is a little bit more intriguing, this time around than, you know, obviously in past years. Just because there's good pieces in place, you know, I think, you know, Matt Stafford's still got a lot of good football left in him. They showed a lot of promise at the beginning of the year and actually looked like legitimate contenders. It all just kind of fell apart. So I think that they're hoping that, you know, they can bring in one of these fresh young minds and hopefully, you know, get, you know, turn that around, you know, similar, in a similar fashion to what the Bengals are trying to do.
I'm sorry about that. Here we're talking to each other. Were you surprised that Bob Quinn made the move on Caldwell?
Not really. I think, you know, Caldwell, you know, he did fine in Indianapolis. I think, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of coaches out there that some feel are better as assistants than head coaches. I don't necessarily think Caldwell's one of them. I think the Lions are just at the point where it's like, okay, we're paying Matt Stafford all this money. If we're not showing improvement, if we're not getting anywhere, then it's just one of those cases where you just can't keep the guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, too. And as much as I like the guy, and I think so many other people like the guy and wanted them to succeed better. And you know, I mean, really, what the biggest criticism, Harry, that a lot of people around here, you know, in Northwest Ohio and in Michigan have is, you know, the plus 500 record is nice at 36-28, but when you break that down to record against winning teams, it's atrocious. And that was the problem this year. They had a run of five straight playoff games after they started 2-0. Five straight games against teams that made the playoffs, I should say. Atlanta, Minnesota, Carolina, New Orleans, and Pittsburgh, and they were 1-4. And that's been the problem with the Caldwell era. Can't beat the good teams in the you know, in the right circumstances. Obviously in the two playoff games, but even in the regular season. And that's going to sink you. If your goal isn't just mediocrity, if you have aspirational, you know, hopes of getting to a championship, you've got to be able to beat the good teams.
Yeah, and I think part of their problem, if it wasn't last year, it was the year before, they just didn't win the close games. And I don't think people honestly realize, like, how big of a difference that makes. Like, you could look at the Oakland Raiders this year. What, they won, like, six games or something like that?
Yeah.
Last year they won 12. And eight of those wins were by 7 points or less. Like, they were winning every single close game. And that makes a difference. I mean, it really does. That's not to say that the Raiders, you know, aren't in a legitimate team. But, I mean, you know, anybody could really beat anybody on Sundays, and, you know, sometimes it just doesn't go your way in a season. Last year is a great example of that for the Raiders. It went in their way. This year, not so much. So,
well,
I mean,
and that leads us to the second part of the story here. Obviously, you know, after this very big disappointing season, instead of another step forward for Jack Del Rio, he's gone, and now it looks like John Gruden is all but signed, sealed, and delivered. He is refuting the multiple reports that say he is going to get an ownership stake in the Raiders. I don't know if he's being honest about that or not, because every year for the last decade, every single coaching job that came open, his name was linked to. Can we get Gruden? Nobody's getting Gruden out of that booth with the luxurious package that he had from ESPN and ABC. He wasn't going anywhere. I feel like for the Raiders to pull him back to the sideline, they have to be giving him something that nobody else has ever had.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I think the one thing that makes this different is that he knows he's got a franchise quarterback. I mean, Derek Carr, he had a bad year this year, obviously, or at least compared to what he did last year. But that's always been the one thing, right? And that's always been kind of his, like, shtick, like, on ESPN. You know, he's like the quarterback whisperer and all these things like that. You know, he was able to win a Super Bowl with Brad Johnson. Now, mind you, that defense was historically great. But Johnson had a good year that year. A lot of people forget that. Like, I think that season he threw like 22 touchdowns and only had like 6 interceptions. It looks honestly very similar to what the Vikings are doing this year. That's not to say they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I think it's kind of like fallen into a perfect place. I think he feels like he didn't complete what he wanted to do at Oakland, and I feel like at this point in his career, like he's kind of done the TV thing. He's had his time away from the game. It's different now, and everything's just kind of fallen into place where it's like, okay, Oakland's not this entirely terrible situation. And he's got a quarterback there to work with. Why not give it a shot?
Yeah, I think that that quarterback is a big, big part of that. There's no doubt about it. And, of course, I think he's, you know, how much of it do you think the Las Vegas part of this plays in it? You know, I mean, 2 years from now, I think the stadium's going to be ready, and they're going to be going to Sin City, and they certainly, the Raiders, want to make a huge splash. There's very few names, I mean, other than Belichick, who's a splash for his success, not for his personality. Nobody really brings all of that, you know, showmanship, if you will, to the table quite like John Gruden. And do you think that maybe that was part of the appeal as well, is the fact that they're going to Vegas and he's not going to have to coach in the mausoleum beyond next year?
I think that does help. And I think, to your point, I think that's what is a little bit more behind the Gruden hire than anything, right? Because if we take a step back here and look, like, John Gruden's coaching record was not, like, incredible,
no,
right?
No, not at all. Like, especially in his last couple of years in Tampa, it really fell down.
Yeah, it wasn't incredible by any means. And a lot of people will tell you, whether it's fair or not, that, you know, he inherited Tony Dungy's team. And, you know, anybody, and I don't believe this, anybody could have coached that team to a Super Bowl. Do I think that team was immensely talented? Absolutely. But, again, taking a step back, looking at his coaching career, it's not like this guy was some kind of wizard. Like, he's not a Bill Belichick. That's not to say he's a bad coach. But at the same time, we're kind of treating him like we do U.S. presidents, right? Like, we think of them as one way in the moment, and then as years pass, you know, it's revisionist history. Like, things
That's
change.
Right. Yeah.
And we view them in a different...
You start to grow fonder of somebody the more distance you put between yourself
yes.
and what they actually did.
Yes, and he's been on TV and done all these things. We love his personality. He's bubbly. He has all these fun phrases and things like that. And we're falling in love with that and being like, oh, yes, remember, he won that Super Bowl that 1 year, but we're forgetting all the other years. That's not to say he's not a good coach, but... Yes, this is quite the splash for Mark Davis and the Raiders, you know, saying that they got the guy that, you know, Tennessee and everybody in Knoxville lost their minds over, thinking that they were going to get him, and they got the guy. And they're getting ready to go to Vegas? That's absolutely what Mark Davis wanted. He got the biggest splash possible.
Yeah, and other than the splash, by the way, when I think of Gruden, by the way, I don't just think of the fact that he got that one Super Bowl with Tampa. I think about the fact that he was a horrific Tuck Rule application away from winning a Super Bowl, or at least getting to another one with the Raiders as
Certainly.
Well. I mean, back-to-back 12-win seasons there. I was working for the team at the time, so I have a little more familiarity. And he
okay.
was. He was, you know, the Tuck Rule away from not letting the Brady dynasty begin, by the way, with that play.
Yeah.
And so he's so well thought of in Oakland among the Raider fan base, and of course by Mark Davis, whose father Al had hired John in the first place. He's really revered there, so it makes a whole lot of sense. I want to ask you a question about the NFL, tying it to a college name, simply because of the way things are going for Jim Harbaugh up in Michigan. There are a lot of people who feel like, who always felt like he took the job at Michigan for the short term, not for, you know, a long 10, 12, 20-year run at his alma mater, that he's always going to be bitten by that NFL bug to come back, where he had some success with the 49ers, including a Super Bowl and an NFC Championship game. Does the fact that he's struggling and taking all kinds of heat for 8-5 Michigan this year, a giant step backwards, 2-7 against his primary opponents, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Penn State in the Big Ten, do you think that's going to chase him to the NFL, and could it be as early as this offseason? Is his name even a consideration?
I think his name's going to come up, but I don't think anybody should take any kind of rumors seriously. While things have not gone exactly the way that he's wanted to at Michigan, he's still got something good, like, brewing there. It hasn't happened quite as quickly as people wanted, but they've been competitive. Well, not necessarily this season. They were rather awful, but... his first two seasons, I mean, like, you know, he made a splash. He's still a bubbly personality. You know, he's where he wants to be. Unless, like, there's a perfect situation that arises in the NFL, I just don't necessarily see that. You know, I don't necessarily want to say it's like a Nick Saban situation, but he kind of did that, tried it. You know, it worked for him, in my opinion. Some people will, you know, tell you otherwise. I mean, you might feel that way, but, I don't think it's something that he's necessarily itching to do. Is it something that I think he's going to completely rule out? I would not say that either. I don't think you could necessarily say that about any college coach except for Nick Saban, honestly, because why would he go anywhere else? But
right.
I just don't think that it's something that he's pursuing currently, and I don't think any of the jobs that are open right now are ones where he would have to leave a situation that I would say he would say is probably like top three, ideally, in his entire career, if that makes sense.
We're talking to Aaron Lyles, SBNation.com, NFL writer here. We're short on time, so just real fast on the way out the door, give me the name of the winners of the wild card games. Tennessee at Kansas City?
Let me get Kansas City.
Atlanta at the Rams.
I got to go with the hometown Falcons.
Really? Okay. I'm going with the Rams there. I think Jared Goff is playing at an extraordinarily high level. I think they look good. Buffalo at Jacksonville. Very, very tough one.
Give me Jacksonville.
Just because of the home team?
Not just because they're the home team. I just that defense is something else. And, you know, it's that time of year, running game. They've got Fournette. He's strong. Yeah. And, you know, that defense is just something else. They fly across the field.
And maybe the best game of the weekend will be Carolina at New Orleans.
New Orleans, no doubt.
All right, good stuff. Harry Lyles, thanks so much for the time. Sorry we got to you a little bit late today. Clock sometimes gets us that way, but we'll check in with you again as these playoffs roll on, and we appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Harry. Happy New Year. That's it. That's all the time that we've got. Hey, Kush.
Yes.
Before you do drive time, would you mind giving some tickets away for
me? I got no problem with that.
I've got a pair. In fact, I've got two pairs of tickets I'm going to give to callers 5 and 6 right now to 866-240-1065. Tickets for what you say? Tickets to Rockets basketball, I say. This Friday, that's right, day after tomorrow at Savage, Rockets and Akron. Two pair right now for one pair each for callers 5 and 6. 866-240-1065.